Welcome to Talk World Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson. This week on Talk World Radio, we are talking about how popular culture fuels war. Our guest, Mimi Healy, is an associate with the Costs of War Project, where she provides research assistance and editing. Most recently, she is one of the co-editors on Cost of War's latest research series, Consuming War. Cost of War's Consuming War research series showcases how every day Americans are inundated with cultural products promoting militarism. And the first report in the series is titled The Militarization of Movies and Television. Mimi Healy, welcome to Talk World Radio.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Thanks for the work you're doing and for coming on. We'll have links to it up at talkworldradio.org. So what is it that drives the militarization of movies and television?
Yeah, well, the author Tanner Melese wrote this paper as part of, like you said, in this series. And the whole series itself will look at how every day Americans are like inundated with this militarization in kind of subtle ways through pop culture. So this paper, Militarization of Movies and Television, looks at what he calls the DoD Hollywood Complex. And that's like the partnership that occurs between the Department of Defense and Hollywood that's been taking place since pretty much the inception of Hollywood. And essentially, that is the ability that the Department of Defense and Pentagon has to provide consulting on movies and television scripts, meet with producers, meet with actors, et cetera, to influence the way that the scripts are written, what the public sees, the portrayal of the military in the public imagination. So, we use the word like propaganda in our paper, and it really is a form of propaganda in and of itself.
What are you able to name some examples? Because people may not know, what are some movies or TV shows that the Pentagon has had any sort of role in making?
Yeah. In the paper, he kind of starts from World War I. President Wilson actually enlisted filmmakers to rally public support for U.S. participation in the war through different films. One of the earliest films that the military has a hand in was in 1916, At the Birth of a Nation, which at the time during World War I, President Wilson enlisted filmmakers to rally public support for U.S. participation in the war. One of the more recent examples is Captain Marvel, and really the whole like Marvel Cinematic Universe. DoD has a huge hand in that whole world, in portraying the military as this force for good, as, you know, this very like patriotic, world saving endeavor. And some other movies throughout the years have been even things like Zero Dark Thirty, Lone Survivor. They even have a hand in some, like, they've been known to participate in like reality TV shows. So, for example, they had a hand in like Kelly Clarkson's reality like talk show that she has. And now with the current recruitment crisis that's going on within the military, they have been involved with like cooking shows and different shows that you really wouldn't anticipate them being involved with, you know, like not necessarily like war movies, but different kind of popular culture movies and TVs that are just ways that they can kind of drive up this participation and interest in like the military as a force for good.
Yeah, I was expecting like a list of war movies. So now I'm confused and want to ask about each of these. Birth of a Nation. I mean, Birth of a Nation, this was the Ku Klux Klan promotion movie that Wilson, the racist, showed at the White House. It's nothing but a giant scandal. But I somehow missed that the U.S. military played a role in making it. Is that true?
Yeah, it was So in the paper, the author kind of goes into, portrays the Ku Klux Klan as heroes, and it was supported by army engineers who provided technical expertise to help stage like the large scale American Civil War battle scenes. So that's kind of the thing. Like some of these movies and television will work with the DoD to like borrow equipment, and they kind of have this incentive to work together so that they don't have to purchase this, astronomically expensive equipment in their movies, but they'd in turn then the Pentagon gets to look at the script and make changes that they feel are necessary. So it can happen in ways that are not outwardly obvious always, but it's kind of about like attuning our attention to whether films and television have like a critical lens on militarization in the US military, or whether it seems to be a more favorable lens.
So if a movie has an aircraft carrier or military jets in it, chances are pretty good the US military had some say over what's in the movie. But how do you know? I mean, movies have 20 minutes of credits at the end. Is it in there? Do they tell you?
No, it's actually not in there. I think like a Freedom of Information Act was, or Freedom of Information, Act request was a few years ago released that had a list of movies, but it's quite difficult to know. The paper actually goes into the statistics behind this. So since the inception of the Hollywood entertainment industry, there's been over 2,500 war-themed movies and television shows made with Pentagon assistance. So some of that information came from this request that was filed. And I think it's kind of about, like I said, like if exactly like you said, if you see military aircraft and weapons, it's likely that they worked with the Pentagon, that the like filmmakers worked with the Pentagon. Otherwise, I do think it's just about like attuning our kind of gauge and meter on exactly, what's the message behind this movie? Like, how are they portraying the military? What is like the lesson that is learned? Is it one of like patriotism? And is the military a force for good? Or is it kind of acknowledging the realities of being at war and like the bloody and brutal nature of that?
But Kelly Clarkson, I forgive my ignorance. This is a singer, right? And somebody who's like a judge on singing shows and cooking shows, you mentioned. Like, what exactly does the military care what people cook? What's the connection?
We don't even go into like the exact specifics of it in the paper, but essentially there's the Kelly Clarkson show. Another example is Guy Fieri's All American Road Trip. America's Got Talent is another example. And often on those shows, there will either be some sort of like portrayal of like the kind of heroism of, whether it's like on a cooking show, something that's like tied to the military, like a restaurant supporting something, or I know that some of the talk shows will have segments of like military families coming home, like a spouse coming back and showing them reuniting. That's quite common and is often like greenlit by the Department of Defense.
It seems more powerful, more insidious than straight up advertising because nobody know. Like when they celebrate the military before a baseball game or a football game, people didn't used to know that their own tax dollars were paying for that. They thought baseball fans just wanted it and voted for it or something, right? And so it seems more powerful that the military is inserting stuff into talk shows and cooking shows, where people must assume it just organically arises out of natural love for the military, right?
Yeah, definitely. That's what this series is going to look at. So we're going to publish a series of papers. This is like the first one, but we do, like you mentioned, we have sports, toys, Video games is such a huge one that I think a lot of people, that's like one of the first one that comes to mind because there's so many like first person shooter games and things. But social media, like the ways that so essentially how it works is the Department of Affairs, sorry, the Department of Defense's Public Affairs Agency has an office called the Entertainment Media Office, the EMO, and that's kind of like their central coordinating agency for military Hollywood partnerships. So each military branch has its own entertainment liaison office. So, in terms of like depending on the message that is trying to be conveyed, to kind of put the military in the most public positive light possible, different offices can work with like different TV shows or different movies, even seemingly like ones that are completely not related at all to an effort that the military might have.
I wonder how this has changed over the years, because it's great to see this study now, but something that's been going on since Birth of a Nation came out. I mean, I can remember after the Top Gun movie, there was a quote of the actor Tom Cruise saying, "I'll never make something like this with the military again. It's a recruitment tool. It's shameful." And then, like decades later, he makes a sequel, right? So it seems like the times change. Have people become more accepting? Is it more normal? Did there used to be more objection than there is now?
That's a good question. I don't know because, with Top Gun, something that our research found was actually that the military set up recruitment offices and at the movie theaters where it was shown, and it was quite successful. Or even with like the Captain Marvel movie, I know they had, let's see, we actually have a statistic. So yeah, they used like the Air Force used the Captain Marvel film to recruit hire female applicants for the Air Force Academy. And in 2023, that rose the applicants percentage rose to 31.2%, which was the highest in 5 years. So you could argue that it has been quite successful. Even in 2019, the Air Force ran an ad with the Captain Marvel in like association with the Captain Marvel film for recruitment called Origin Story. And apparently our research found that it had over 11 million views and, 2 million impressions across social media platforms. So I think that it is quite successful, even though I think some of these like larger, more apparent films about the military and about war making are maybe seen for what they are. There's so many ways that the Department of Defense partners with like Hollywood to influence our public perception.
Yeah, and then we pay for it because the Department of So-Called Defense is funded by us. We're speaking with Mimi Healy, who is an associate with the Costs of War Project, and they have a report called The Militarization of Movies and Television. I have to confess, I don't think I've seen the Captain Marvel movies, but these are superhero movies with magical powers, right? They're getting people to sign up for real world enlistment in an actual military with killing and dying because of superhero magical fairy tale movies.
I think that at least from my understanding and what we kind of go into in the report is the Captain Marvel film really like promotes the military as this like force for good in the world. So I think that like for example, the let's see. So yeah, I think the Air Force having such a heavy hand in the film, like in the film you can see like F-15Cs soaring through the air and there's this like very powerful female protagonist and it's just some might argue a subtle way of kind of portraying this, and some might argue it's incredibly explicit, but the superhero aspect, like saving the world, being a force for good, fighting off evil, creating this binary of good and evil, I think that's something that the superhero movies do so well. And when it's applied to real life, our binary for good and evil, especially as Americans, is often seen through the portrayals of good and evil that the US military has put out, right? So it's like post 9/11, that has been looking at the word terrorist and terrorism as this force for evil. Now it's with Trump looking at, people crossing the border. There's always this binary that is shown to kind of portray that and have the other or the enemy. And those superhero movies are really effective at creating that way of thinking in our public consciousness.
They must be very, very effective. It just seems such a leap for me. Like they're advertising like join the National Guard and help people when there are hurricanes and forest fires, and it all sounds nice. And then you sign up and get sent to go kick in doors to steal oil fields or whatever. But superhero movies, like I remember reading, I think the Iron Man movies, which I also haven't seen, started out somewhat anti-military, and the influence of this military partnership turned it pro-military. Like it, there have been cases, right, where there are scripts and plans that are not super pro-military, and the military gets them changed.
Yeah, exactly. So the military essentially, if a film wants to use any of that equipment, then the military gets to kind of sign off. So it can happen in subtle ways. In our paper, there's quite a few examples of ways that the military can have a hand in this. I can actually tell you some examples. Like, for example, let's see if I can find one from looking. Even something like a sci-fi series, there's one called Stargate SG-1. It kind of primed the public for this like continuous future military conflicts, even in outer space. So it's even like the imagining of the military in outer space, or the imagining of the military in every facet that we can imagine, I think is kind of like the insidious ways that they come in and often can have a hand in movies and television, because it's such a force for like, creating this like other world or other way of thinking, right? It like brings us out of our present reality. Maybe watching a movie or television, you're so sucked in, but it's like even putting in the imagination, the possibility for the military to have roles in society in these ways. I think it's like a really powerful way of doing so through this medium of film and television.
Yeah, I almost think all these movies where the US military is fighting space aliens and zombies and monsters gets people in the habit of thinking that what the military does is fight these evil beings who are not human. And then when it happens to be fighting Russians or Koreans or Iranians or Syrians, there's that habit of thought already in place to be able to say, well, they're not actually humans. They're those evil monsters that the military fights, you know?
Exactly. And that's really what we're hoping this paper can convey to people, is like they're through this partnership and through this form of propaganda, it really simplifies and distorts the real history of not only US empire, but like the current history of brutal and bloody wars that the US has fought. And often there's not only little criticism of the US military in these movies and television shows, but it's a complete lack of giving voice or showing the reality for people on the ground, like the civilians impacted by war. It completely obscures the humanity of people harmed by war, harmed by intelligence operations. And it also promotes the idea that we need this continuous, ever expanding violence to keep us safe, to keep the security of America, and to kind of keep that role within the wider world as well.
It seems like it's not just the creation, but also the distribution and promotion of these movies, because you have a Oscar-winning documentary from Palestine that you can't see because it's not in any theaters, it's not on any of the streaming channels, but you have, sheer crap that's just nothing but 2 hours of fighting with five words spoken and couldn't win a high school drama prize. And it's across the world because the language is not a barrier, and apparently it's acceptable to all the distributors, right?
Yeah, I think it goes to show like the power of funding and money in this, especially in the Hollywood entertainment industry. I think the funding sources, and in this case, like the military. I mean, it's just such a behemoth. There's so much money in the Department of Defense, right? Like just for 2025, the military budget was over $850 billion. So, they can use that money for fighter jets and things, and they can also use that money for their media offices, to really influence and kind of hide the real world consequences of being at war.
Yeah, and they've done such a effective job. I mean, you said 2,500 movies that the Pentagon has actually been involved, or maybe some of them are pre the Pentagon, but the U.S. military has been involved in. I wonder how many thousands that it hasn't been involved in that sort of copy the same plot lines and effects and lessons, because if I look at Amazon or Netflix or any of these channels, it's hard to find a movie that isn't about the glories of violence and war. I mean, there have to be, I don't know if you have a count, but there have to be many, many thousands, right?
Yes, yeah. I don't have a count, but that would be such an interesting, gosh, probably like impossible thing to quantify. Like you said, it's just there's so many, even like, yeah, it's not only if the Department of Defense has a hand in the film or television show that it's portraying this kind of altruistic picture of the US as like a global superpower. It's so embedded in so many of the stories and narratives that are told. And, the idea of, I think, like not only the US as a superpower or global, place within geopolitics, but I think even like what is patriotism? Like when we really stop to ask, I think that's something that the Cost of War Project really tries to do is like, we try to kind of stop, take a step back, at least with the post 9/11 wars, which is kind of our main area of focus in US militarism. It's like, well, why did we go to war? What was not only the intention behind it, but was it worth it? Like, what does it really mean to fight for this, like winning hearts and minds, fight for this force for good? Has it been effective at that? And I think wrapped up in that is like, what is patriotism? Is true human security and being very proud in serving your country, something that is done through violence, or is it done through the sharing of information? Is it done through an AmeriCorps program? Is it done through, like different ways that we can really truly like have safety and security without necessarily always having it be this, show of violence and show of force to have a constant, deterrence in the world.
Sounds like a wonderful thing for people to start thinking about to me. Specifically with these, we've got just a few minutes left with these movies and TV shows. What can we do? I mean, the US is party to a treaty that bans war propaganda. Can this stuff be banned as war propaganda? Or can it be exposed? Can we require labeling this movie made with your dollars through the US military as war propaganda? Are there ways to find movies and television shows that are not, that are like outside of this? Where do you find, the good movies that don't promote war? What can people do?
That's a great question. I think ultimately, like I would love if they could be more public with this information, right? Have some sort of showing or warning on a film or TV show. But I think for now, one of the biggest things that at least our project really believes is like sharing this knowledge, information, knowledge is power. When we're kind of aware of how we're consuming these cultural messages, we're better able to like resist the effects and ask critical questions and engage with it in a different way. So for us, I would say the biggest thing is really like, yeah, spreading this information widely. So, you can find our paper on our website. And also we have a social media campaign that people can get involved with. We have it posted on our social media channels on the costs of war, but for now, I think it's really like we're so fortunate to live in a country where we can hold our military to account and be very critical. Obviously, not every country has that, not everyone has that ability or freedom to do so. And so it's really about doing that. And I think spreading this information and really engaging in critical conversations around what we consume and why and what it's representing, what are our kind of underlying beliefs behind some of this, I think is such a powerful way to combat this kind of form of propaganda.
And those rights you mentioned have to be used or lost. I think you can be disappeared from Columbia University at the moment. So.
Yes, exactly. I know. I say that. And also, it's with a lot of nuance, obviously, and context.
Well, with just a minute or two left, how can people keep in touch and follow what Costs of War Project is doing? What is the website? Where's the social media? How can people follow your work?
Thank you. So on social media, our name or handle is just Costs of War. The website, we publish all of our research papers there. You can find that at it's through the Watson Institute at Brown University, but if you look up Costs of War Project, that'll come up. And we have through the Watson Institute, we have a YouTube channel that you can find some of our webinars on. And yeah, you can sign up for our mailing list on our website. Please join us and feel free to share all papers, all posts, everything with people that you think would find this important.
I highly recommend it, the Costs of War Project. There are many, many costs documented there, not just financial. War is a very, very costly thing. We've been speaking with Mimi Healy, who is an associate there with the Costs of War Project. We'll have links to the project and to this first report in this series up at talkworldradio.org. Mimi Healy, thanks very, very much for coming on Talk World Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is Talk World Radio. I'm David Swanson. Take action at rootsaction.org. Help end war at worldbeyondwar.org. Read or listen to today's Peace Almanac entry at peacealmanac.org. All past shows can be heard at talkworldradio.org. Talk World Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way.